Hey guys, Martin here from the Ad Council. Welcome to our second podcast. Today we're going to do something a bit different than the last one. We're going to be giving you an audio version of our latest presentation, My Differently Abled Life. That's what it's called, right?
Yes.
I think that's what it's called. Today we have me and Emma. Emma, say hi.
Hi.
And we also have someone new to you. Not to us. This is Karen Harvey Olson, who is our youth coordinator. She kind of makes sure we're on track and such. And she's going to present the questions that we're going to be discussing. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Karen, and I will be facilitating this podcast today, giving the topics that the youth will be discussing. This topic came about at one of our meetings when the youth were discussing kind of life as a youth with special healthcare needs or disabilities and how they wish their parents understood such and such, or how they wish their teachers knew what it was like to, you know, have to be dealing with chronic pain and also have to study for this exam. So the youth got together and came up with a series of topics that they felt kind of were the main points around that discussion. And we've gone around this year and presented at various family support councils for an organization in our state called Partners in Health, which provides support to families who have a youth under the age of 21 with a special healthcare need. So our council's gone around and presented to these families and kind of just giving them some insight into what it means to try and be a, quote, typical youth dealing with youth things like relationships and wanting to go to the basketball game or try out for the play, but also living with chronic pain or chronic illness. Are we ready to start with our topics?
I believe so, Miss Karen.
All right, so our first topic is parents. And you could sort of frame this topic as in, what do you wish your parents knew, or what do you wish that they could understand, or what do you wish you could tell them about your life as a youth living with chronic pain or chronic illness?
So parents are tricky because they're kind of who we rely on, who everyone relies on, whether you have a special healthcare need or a disability or not. But when you have a special healthcare need or a disability, that kind of amplifies times 10 because they're your advocate, they're the person you rely on to remind you to do your meds, and like there's a lot of things that a parent is responsible for. But this typical parent-child situations that present themselves still exist, and it's still not particularly easy to get along with your parent all the time, and that can be difficult if you are someone who has a serious illness that needs attending to.
So when you're a teenager, your relationship with your parent is always complicated, but if you have a special healthcare need or a disability, now your parent's not just your mom, they're now your caregiver, and they drive you to your doctor's appointments and do all the stuff that you can't yet. So it gets really complicated because now both you and your parents are now doing kind of a shuffling game of parental responsibility, then caregiver, then back to parent type of thing. So it gets really messy sometimes, and it's hard to like be able to parent smoothly, like, no, you can't stay up till midnight, or you can't do this or that, when you have to then be, well, if you do this, then you'll get really sick, but you can do it type of thing. So what gets really tricky with me and my mother is I have a chronic pain condition. So because of this, I don't look like I'm in pain anymore, really, unless it gets really bad, and then I'll be looking pretty bad. But so it gets complicated because I don't tell people if something hurts really bad a lot unless I need medication. So my mother has, so then usually like my mom's like, do homework or get off your phone, it's midnight type of thing, but I'm in too much pain to go to sleep. So that ends up sometimes with me being a little snappy because I'm annoyed that she's not recognizing this because it's been 5 years when, you know, I do look like a normal person a lot of the time, so it's hard. So you have to remember a lot of the time that even though they're with you every single time you're in the hospital or you're at a doctor's appointment and you spend way too much time with your parents now to the point where you think they understand everything without you having to say it, they don't. They can probably understand about half the stuff without you having to say it, but there are always going to be moments where you have to remember that they don't live inside your head. Now you have a chronic medical condition, so you get good at hiding it. So I look like I'm fine and I can go run around, but I actually can, and if I stand up, I'll fall over. So it gets messy because then your parents don't, my mother won't know that I'm being snappy and angry because I'm in pain and I want to scream, but I don't. So she thinks I'm just being a teenager, which ends up in arguments because she's like, you can't yell or swear, and you know, like a normal parent going to a teenager telling them what's not acceptable. And then it usually ends up with me saying my leg hurts, and then she's like, well, why didn't you tell me in the first place? I would have left you alone. Which is kind of my fault on that front. So.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, it's definitely hard as a child to have something like that and then not necessarily want to always have to tell your parents, because like you want them to know on your own, but you also don't necessarily want to burden them because you know they can't make it better. So you know it'll upset them, so you don't want to tell them, but then you're snappy and then they're like, well, why are you snappy? And you don't tell them, and then it's a fight, and that's not fun for anyone. But for me, I have Lyme disease, and my biggest symptoms with Lyme disease are anxiety, and then I get joint pain, but I have not had as much joint pain recently as I used to. But for me, my anxiety, it comes and goes. It's not a constant thing, and when I do have it, it's usually pretty bad. And my mother also has anxiety, and at a certain point, I figured out, well, if I tell her I'm anxious, it's going to make her anxious. And then I'm anxious, but now she's anxious. And no one's better, so what's the point of saying it in the first place? And that's not super healthy. I think it has caused, I'll get to it later, but it has caused situations that were not fun because of that. And I have gotten to the point where I've realized, okay, now I do need to tell it, but there's different ways around it. So in the past, I would have been like, I'm anxious. And then she'd be like, oh my God, what do I do? And then everyone's anxious and nothing's getting better. So now instead of doing that, I'll be like, this is bothering me. And kind of focusing on the specifics of what is, rather than saying I'm anxious as kind of like a general thing, I will say, I'm nervous for this. And then my mom can be like, yo, okay, feel better. Which is more constructive than if I'm just like, I'm anxious, and then she freaks out, because then we're both freaked out. So I feel like, for me, focusing on better communication skills was helpful. And I think the other thing is, my dad is not an anxious person at all. In fact, he's very not anxious. And he tends to be a good bridge of anxiety, because like if I'm anxious and I don't know how to tell my mom, I can tell my dad, and my dad can be like, okay, I'll help you like tell her, or I'll just listen because it doesn't bother me. So that I'm really fortunate to have that. But at this point, I think looking back, I really see that communication is the easiest way to fix it, because there are ways you can communicate what you're feeling to your parent that won't upset them, or if it does upset them, you can communicate to them, please don't show me you're upset, because I can't tell you if you show me you're upset. So if you have a reaction, can you do, like, I know it sounds selfish, but can you do it somewhere else? Because like, if you want me to tell you, I can't see that, because it's very hard to see your parent emotionally distraught or upset, especially if you internalize a sense of, this is my fault because it's my disability that's causing this.
Yeah, we had had a story relayed to us on the Yacht Council where there was a young adult with diabetes whose mother would get so upset when he was having issues with his health condition that he stopped telling her, stopped talking about it. And so he ended up in a pretty serious health situation because of that. and everything did resolve itself and turn out okay. But, you know, his message was just to kind of talk to your parents about, you know, it's okay if you're freaked out, like you're scared about your child's health, that's great, but go be scared. I think Emma said this the other day, like, go pick another place to have your freak out. Don't do it in front of me, because then you're now making me, you know, responsible for that. And then I'm not going to tell you things that maybe I need to tell you, because maybe we should be going to the doctor instead of, you know, sitting on the couch, but I'm not going to say it. So,
yeah. Going off of that, my mother is a very emotional person and I am not. So that alone already isn't a good combination when we're locked in a room together because I'm sick and she has to take care of me. So what would happen was, you can't fix my condition, and the medication I have helps me very little, and sometimes it doesn't do anything at all. So I got sick very fast and no one really knew what was happening. So my parents and me both realized at the same time that you couldn't fix me, which of course made them upset and me upset. But what I started happening was, when I told my mom I had pain or it was getting worse or it was spreading to a different part of my body, she would get upset and, you know, sometimes maybe cry, which, you know, is a normal reaction. But if your parents are now upset because of you, and what happens is you realize that, okay, well, this is happening to me, and I know no one can do anything about it, and if I tell anyone, it's not going to change it. So I'm just going to keep this to myself and suffer alone, because, you know, then that's only one person that gets to be upset about it. So what happened was, I ended up in a couple kind of dangerous situations because things were happening, and I didn't tell my mom until I told the doctor, and then, you know, took me off to some tests, and it turned out there were some bad things happening that shouldn't have been. So really, what me and my mother came up with a deal after one of these incidents was that, okay, I will tell you something and I'll tell you any medication, but you can't react at all. Like, don't be upset, don't be indifferent, just say, okay, what can I do to help you? And then she would go, like, outside or in the hallway and have her own reaction or cry or whatever she did. I think she probably cried, knowing my mother. And that worked. So really, like Martin's saying, communication is really important. So if you're not telling your parents something because you know that they can't do anything and it's just going to make them upset, talk to them about this. Maybe say, work on a system where you say something or you write it down or you send them an email or something like that that tells them what's going on so they know. So because what's happening might not just be related to your disability, it might not be harmless. It could be something pretty dangerous, or something could be actually wrong, and they might need to know so, you know, they can go help you. So it is important not to keep everything bottled up in yourself just to keep other people from getting hurt.
Are we ready to move on to the next topic?
Yeah.
All right, so our next topic is relationships, and that could be family members. I could still include your parents if you think of something else you wanted to add. But it could be other family members, friends, or a boyfriend or a girlfriend. So relationships.
So relationships are tricky because that is your relation to every other human that isn't you on the whole planet. And when you have special health care needs or disabilities, that's a whole... It's already complicated. Like, girlfriends, boyfriends, friends, acquaintances, mothers, cousins, fathers, cousins, grandparents, all of that stuff is already pretty complicated on its own. I mean, you've seen the 90s sitcoms, family gatherings are always awkward, but that can have a whole new level of just complicatedness if you add in special healthcare needs and disabilities. And for me personally, both me and Emma have issues that are not super well recognized in the medical community currently. They're getting better, they're getting there, but they're still not quite there. And when I was first diagnosed with Lyme disease, a good amount of my family basically just did not think it was real. Like, because one of the things my doctor told me I needed to do was be gluten-free, and I have multiple family members that believe being gluten-free is just a stupid fad diet, and despite knowing that I cannot eat gluten, when I would see them, they would only ever have options like that were like pasta or sandwiches or things like that, and every single time they would offer it to me and I would say no, they'd say, oh yeah, that's right, you're gluten-free, in a very snide way. So that's just one small example of that. And then for friends and stuff, it's also difficult because you can't do everything your friends can do. If, like, and just making friends in general can be difficult sometimes if you're seen as, like, I'm using quotation marks, the sick kid. And I think that makes it really hard personally because then you feel isolated. I'm thankful enough that I've been able to find friends who understand me and such, and my friends know me well enough to know, like, when I'm anxious or when I'm in pain and, like, understand that there's reasons for that and I'm not just, like, being difficult for no reason. And it was not exactly easy to get to that point because I think a lot of people don't really know how to deal with people that are different or have new things. And I think that's when you really find out who is the most, like, who really cares about being your friend, because there will be people that don't want to be or don't understand enough to be able to competently be your friend anymore. And that can be tough. But that's when you also find out, like, your best friends and who means the most.
Yeah, so definitely when you have something different or when you're chronically ill or have a disability, you definitely find out who actually cares about you and your family and your friend groups and who are just really, you know, pretending. So my medical issues, I have a couple.
A brief intermission brought to you by...
Hello?
I can probably stop that.
So, I have multiple medical conditions. It turned out that I had a genetic disorder called EDS that no one knew about until I was 11 and I developed my pain disorder. So, that's another thing, but that always... We always kind of knew there was something a little off with me, so... When I got sick, my illness is really... controversial almost in certain aspects of the medical field, as in literally almost every doctor I've ever met have never even heard about it, and usually the ones that do have treat it in a very damaging way that is not helpful at all and end up hurting you more and making you worse. So it was very complicated because it's pain. And, you know, everyone reacts to pain differently, and when you have it for a long time, you stop looking like you're in pain. You can feel like you're getting stabbed all over, and I'll still be smiling, because, you know, it's just my life now, and I've adapted to it. I'm in a wheelchair now, but I wasn't when I was 11. So what happened was, it was very hard for a lot of my family members to understand. So my sister is a lot older than me, so she... already moved out, so I saw her rarely, but when I got sick, she found it very hard to understand the fact that I actually was, and that I couldn't just push past it, and there was nothing they could do, and the doctors that I was seeing at the time were actually wrong. So what happened was she would refuse to, like, wouldn't refuse, but she would talk me out and kind of belittle me down until I said, okay, I don't need crutches. And I can get on the bike and I can ride a mile when, if I do, I might pass out. Which my family knew, but she didn't really understand. So that was really dangerous. And my mother and her ended up having arguments because I couldn't stand up for myself with her. And then my father's side of the family, I don't talk to anymore. Because they do not believe I am ill. They believe that my mother made it all up, no matter what we say, and they are very mean people. So relationships can be very difficult and tricky, and they can make you feel crappy, and that everything is your fault, and maybe they're right, and you really aren't just trying hard enough, which is the truth. So and then of course I lost all my friends that I had, except for one, so that was another thing. So when you're sick, you know that you're sick. Whoever really matters, let's say your mother or your father, they know you're sick. The biggest thing to take away when you have a special health care need or disability, if someone doesn't believe you're ill or that you are not trying hard enough, and they are toxic, they no longer matter in your life. Doesn't matter who they are. Doesn't matter if they're your sister. Doesn't matter if they're your father or an entire side of your family. They are now gone because you are dealing with enough. And you are ill. And you know you're ill. And you know your limits. So you gotta listen to your body and not let other people tell you what you can and cannot do. And what your limits are when they don't understand it. So toxic people need to be cut out because they will do more damage than any good that they ever could. So just believe in your diagnosis because that is what happened to you. You have something that isn't totally correct. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but is now part of your life and you must change to adapt to it. And you can't listen to anyone else that is trying to tell you otherwise that are wrong.
Yeah, I think it becomes a point where it's very emotionally damaging to have someone tell you, try harder. Because when you have special healthcare needs, like we touched a bit on parents, you already internalize a sense of guilt and a sense of this is my fault for what your issues might change about your life and your family's life. And it's really not good to have people in your life that are also saying, this is your fault, like it adding on to the guilt that part of you is already creating. And I think it's very important to reach a sense of comfort in being who you are, because if once you get to a point where you're confident enough in who you are, not only will it be easier to cut other people out, but you'll start attracting the people that you want to be attracting as friends if you have the confidence to say, like, this is who I am. I have this and this and this. That's me. And if you can get to that point, the right people will be like, awesome, let's hang out on Tuesday. Let's go see the new Avengers movie. And if they're not, then they're going to be immediately weeded out of your friend group, and as they should be, because if they're not going to accept you for who you are, then they have no place hanging out with you or being around you or any of that. And I think there are probably some people out there that it's just completely better off that they don't accept you, because anyone who doesn't accept a child for their disability is probably not worth keeping around.
I know you had mentioned something about communication in relationships and how if you're not honest about that reason that you can't do whatever, like, that not being honest about it actually becomes a bigger issue, a bigger barrier. I didn't know if you would share that. So would you know the story I'm talking about? The dance?
Oh, yeah. So, real quick, the person that is our coordinator is actually my mom. So that whole thing when I was talking about parents in the third party, she was sitting right there. So, anyways, once a couple years ago, a girl asked me to a dance, and because of my anxieties and my Lyme disease, that was kind of the first thing that really broke down a barrier for me of being able to talk about what I had, because I was like very panic, like I was having like full-blown panic attacks, like I was scared to leave my house, like I was laying in bed all day, and I was not able to make it to the dance. And I knew that I had to tell her why, because it wasn't about her. Like, I didn't want her to feel like I'm just trying to get out of going to the dance with her. So that was really the first time that I think I was able to fully accept who I was in order to, like, because I knew that if I didn't, I was going to hurt her, because it's rude to just kind of, like, back out of something like that. And in doing that, she was very accepting. She's like, oh yeah, okay, I understand. Maybe next time. And I think that really broke a barrier down for me where I was like, okay, so I can talk about it. Like, I'm not incapable. I can advocate for myself. Because before then, I had a really hard time expressing that I had anxieties, because growing up until I was like 11, I didn't experience that. Like, it was not something that was in my everyday life. So when it hit me, it hit me like a truck, like it was very different, and I wasn't super comfortable with it. So I think being able to get past that barrier really was really good for me, because since then I've been able to be much more forward about my setbacks.
Yeah, if you have someone that might be having a hard time understanding what your disability is or what your health issue is, if you start lying about what the reason is, it's going to make it a lot harder to understand, which mm-hmm. would happen with my sister. So it's still an issue, but it's getting better. So when I was younger, what would happen was she would be like, well, why can't we go out to dinner? And I'm like, because I don't feel good. And she's like, well, what do you mean you don't feel good? And I'm like, And I would like then shut down and my mother would have to handle it, which then in turn made it a lot harder. So biggest thing was when I started telling her in my everyday life that older sibling
that she will not be named for copyright reasons and yes. legal reasons.
Yes, that I'm actually home from school today because my leg hurts too much, or I actually missed that party or that dance because I'm too ill. And that made it easier for her to understand that, okay, this isn't just when I see you, this isn't just this, this is every single day this is happening. Which made it easier, and of course I have anxiety as well, so my ability to handle it better got better, so then I could stand up for myself more. So same as Martin, I was fine until like one day, and then all of a sudden, boom, I can't walk, and I'm too nauseous to eat, and I'm passing out when I stand up. So all this stuff happened really fast, really quick, and no one knew what was going on. So then everyone in my life had to immediately do a 160 to try to adapt to it and take me to specialists, and the specialists didn't know what was going on. So of course, a bunch of 11-year-old children obviously did not understand the whole complicity of that. So that made that very difficult when all of a sudden I couldn't go to school. And I said I would go to this party, but I can't go now, and I know we had plans. So that made them a little angry at certain moments, which then in curse turned into, you know, children get angry, they tend to pick on people if they're not totally great people in the beginning with.
I think there's a very big level of this is something we shouldn't talk about and we shouldn't ask this question. And I think something that we as a society kind of drills into children's brains is that it's not okay to ask. I think you're supposed to ask when you're told to ask, and you're supposed to care when you're told to care. And I think that makes it really hard for understanding to happen. I think that's why there's so many issues of children bullying children that are different, because I think they're raised thinking, well, if I ask this, it's going to upset them. And then that internalizes as, oh, they're weird. And I don't, like, they never ask the questions. So now children are not, like, if children aren't told what something is, they're naturally going to fear it, because that's human nature. And human nature is amplified when you're a kid, because that's pretty much all you have to go off of is your human nature. And I think something that could fix that would be teaching kids it's okay to ask questions. Like, teaching your 5-year-old that it's okay to ask questions, as long as their questions aren't, like, very rude. Like, if you go up to someone and be like, why do you walk funny? That's not, maybe not the most constructive way, but just asking questions, because then when you're older, it's not such a weird thing to see someone who's different, because then it's just like, oh, yeah, that's just someone who's different.
Yeah, there is the invisible wall with people with special healthcare needs and disabilities that are, when you're younger, like, if you see someone in a wheelchair, your parents are like, don't stare at them, that's rude, and you're like, okay, but I don't understand what's going on. Which, of course, I probably did, because, you know, I didn't know any of this stuff until I got sick. And I was at the other side of that wall. And I didn't know what to ask, and it was awkward. So, obviously, if you're a child and all of a sudden there's something that you don't understand and your whole life is telling you, don't bother them, don't look at them, don't ask them, because that's rude, then obviously you're internalizing of, these are bad people, this is bad, avoid it or, like, fight against it. Because that's the type of thing that kids do. It's pretty simple of, you tell them something, they're gonna start acting that way. So asking questions is a big deal, and you know how you answer them too. So like if someone asked me when I was younger what was wrong with my leg, I would give them the answer that as time went on, I would be like, my nerves are messed up, which isn't the truth, but it was easier to understand. And then it just, answers change, because you get more comfortable and you learn what to say and what not to say.
Yeah. So I think the next thing we're going into is
balancing act.
That's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure because I know we switched those before. Anyways, balancing act. So we've touched on this briefly throughout both because it's something that comes up. I think it's a daily thing for everyone who has special healthcare needs and disabilities is trying to balance your health, your social life, your work life, whatever different aspects of your personality there are, trying to make sure they're cohesively working together and not just like a mess of destruction and pain, because that's not fun. No one likes that. And I think it's very hard because kids have a lot on their plate from the time you're like 6 to when you're like 22. Like, you have a lot to do. There's school, there's work, learning about how school and work works, and then there's also like social time, and there's extracurricular activities, and just your life's very, very busy. And if you're like suddenly, or maybe you've grown up with it your whole life, I'm gonna speak from the suddenly part because that's what applies to me, it like you suddenly have something that might limit that. It's hard to know how to balance that from the rest of everything. So I touched briefly on the fact that I have had joint issues in the past. Currently, I don't have a ton of joint issues, although as we speak, my knee's actually not doing so great. But when I was younger, when I was around the time I was first diagnosed, every morning when I would wake up, my kneecaps would pop. And that's not a particularly pleasant experience for an 11-year-old boy to have every morning. And I did gymnastics and parkour and martial arts. That was a very big part of like who I was, and having my knees be in a condition to pop so often made that scary because I didn't want to stop doing what I was doing, but I was scared that I was going to injure myself. But being 11 and 12 and 13, I did not necessarily have the thought to be like, maybe I should sit this out. So I'm really lucky I didn't permanently injure myself because I continued going to those things even on days when I could have been like, oh, my leg's bothering me, maybe I should stay home. But I didn't, and thankfully nothing came of that. But looking back on it, it probably would have been better to sit out on those things because I could have hurt myself or hurt myself more. I actually did hurt my knee pretty badly once during when I did parkour, and thankfully it was at a time when my knee was past the popping. I'd been on medication and antibiotics, and my Lyme disease was not, my knee was not popping every day, but I was climbing something and I actually fell off on a part that didn't have a mat, knee first, on the same knee that used to pop, and it didn't pop, but it was very painful, and I had to miss the next 2 weeks and wear a brace, and just, it was not a fun time. But thankfully, it was like a year past that whole knee popping thing, so it was not an issue. But like, looking back, I've always been like, wow, that could have been really, really bad if that had happened just a year or a month or just sooner. I could have been like very permanently injured. So it's definitely hard to find the balance because you don't want to commit to things that you can't do, and you don't want to hurt yourself. Because like I said, with the dance thing, like I committed to that probably against my better judgment, knowing that I could have a panic attack, and then I did, and then I had to miss out, and that girl could have found a better date and someone that wasn't dealing with my issues. And that's hard looking back on. I think, thankfully, I've gotten to a point where I know my limits a lot better than I did, but there was definitely a learning curve to being able to figure out, okay, this is something I can't do, this is something I can do, this is what I need to know, this is what I need to not know, and this is what everyone around me needs to know in case something does happen.
Yeah, balancing acts are difficult and they're tricky. In normal life, just balancing high school or, you know, being a little kid or soccer and social lives, but when you add a special healthcare need, that adds a whole other level of, you know, trippiness So it's very difficult when all of a sudden you're, again, I got suddenly ill just like Martin, so I'm going off of that. But I had also had a genetic disorder my whole life, which we didn't know, but I was having issues. So basically, short thing is that my body can't hold itself together, so I dislocate everything all the time. Like, I literally just dislocated my wrist. So my whole life, it's kind of been, okay, don't push yourself this. I'm always getting hurt. Something always hurts. The doctors say it's nothing type of thing, so I always knew I needed to be more careful with stuff. We just never knew what it was. So that was a really difficult. So I did, what am I saying? I am so tired.
Want to pause and restart?
No, I just need to think for a second.
So, how is your day, listener? How have you been doing? I hope you're doing good. I hope we're not bothering you. I hope you're enjoying this, actually.
Hope you're not forced to do this. So balance and acts are really hard, especially if you're a teenager. So all of a sudden you have all these responsibilities, but now you have a special healthcare need and you got to figure out how to deal with that at the same time. So because I have chronic pain, that means that any giving notice, I basically can be so in so much pain that I'll start going into shock at basically random flip of the switch type of stuff. Like, I could be asleep when I wake up, or I could be at a party, and it's like that. So that's very difficult. So my balancing acts include trying to figure out how to get to school without dying and, you know, getting dressed and taking medication and then, you know, interacting with everyone. So when you constantly have to juggle everything, it gets kind of stressful, obviously, and it gets very difficult, and you gotta learn how to, like, balance but not destroy yourself at the same time, because I am notorious for not pacing myself or taking breaks or not doing things when I should be at home resting on medication, to the point where I have permanent damaging in certain spots of my body because I've injured them so much and didn't listen. So balancing is hard. If your body is telling you not to do something, you really need to listen to it. And it could be anything from diabetes to a genetic disorder to a pain condition, because, you know, you're going to do damage and your body has these warning spots for a reason. So, like, going to school is very hard for me because it takes a lot of energy out of me. So I would be going to doctor's appointments and a hospitalization and then back to school and homework and all this stuff, and I would be killing myself to do it. And that's not exactly good balancing. I don't know what I'm saying.
It makes sense. It's okay. Deep breaths.
So when you're balancing all this stuff and then you're gonna add in your social life, that's another level of craziness. So people might not understand what you're going through every day just to, you know, exist. And that can be difficult. So when you have to take medication or wear braces or be in a wheelchair, it's hard enough it is, and then you gotta add in, like, homework and teachers and teenage girls and their stuff.
It's a good way of
putting it. That's literally the only way you can explain that. It gets pretty crazy. And you gotta be able to take a step back and say, okay, this is what I need to do, and none of this stuff matters until I take care of myself. Because, you know, nothing's gonna matter if you can make friends or go to a party if you can't stand up or, you know, use your arm because you didn't listen when it was broken type of thing.
Yeah, your body is your temple, and being able to, like, figure out that you need to take care of it first, I think is hard, especially because you don't want people to just think you're trying to get out of things with your disability or, like, trying to make excuses. Because we presented this a few days ago, and we had a question saying, well, what if you're just trying, like, what about the days where kids are just trying to get out of doing the thing?
That doesn't really exist for us.
Yeah.
When you're forced to miss things like school, you want to go to school.
Exactly. Like, when you have experiences where you can't go to the thing, you're not going to use your disability as an excuse, because that's just one more thing that it's taken from you. Like, you don't, like, the parents seem very baffled by this answer, because I think they were expecting a different answer. But I legitimately, like, neither of us know anyone who has special health care needs or disabilities.
And we know a lot of people.
Yeah, that would, would willingly miss something.
Unless there's something deeper going on.
Unless there's, like, a, like, maybe there's a bully incident, or, like, there's something, like, really bad.
Teacher.
And then, even then, I think using the disability as an excuse would be, like, one of the last things that they would do, because I think people don't want to let their disability take more from them. I think people don't want to act like to miss out, because they've missed out so much that they want to do the thing. And I think people don't want to lose that trust, because I know for me, I worry all the time that people are going to say, like, if I say I'm anxious, well, there's a good chance someone in this room, like, not this room specifically, but in the room where that happens, is probably thinking, oh, he's making that up to get out of this. Like, I think that's something that a lot of us think, and we don't want to, like, have a boy who cried wolf situation where it's just not believed, because there are times where we do have to miss things, so we don't want to miss things when we don't have to miss things. Does that make sense? I think it makes sense.
I've had people tell me to my face that, well, it's just because you're a teenager, or you don't want to go to school, or that and that and that, when I'm telling them, well, I'm on homebound now, or I missed the entire last week. So let's once again round back to my sister and her husband. So, one of my medical conditions gives me extreme exhaustion because my blood doesn't circulate correctly, so I can't get up before a certain time because I actually will pass out because I'm too tired. So I tell my sister's husband this and her, and his response immediately is, well, that's just because you're a teenager. I'm 13 at this point, and I'm like, no, this is because I'll actually pass out if I wake up before this point. Which, of course, they ignored. So when you, I think I've had, usually a pretty big deal, I think, is what parents think a lot is, like, well, what if, how to tell if your kid's just really ill when they have a special health care need or they're just not trying to get out of school. Which, of course, I imagine the parents probably did, or if they had older kids did that, or younger kids. But we don't do that, because this, the fact that we are well enough to be able to leave the house and go to school and talk to people, even if the people are annoying and the teachers mean well, now we get to harp about it to our friends at school because we have the ability to do that. And by using something like that as an excuse, you're now taking away, it's taking away another part of your life that you want to do, even if it's bad.
Exactly. Like, we want to still, like, part of life is dealing with annoying things. Like, that's part of being a person, and part of day-to-day activities. Like, there's nowhere in the world you can go where you won't have to occasionally do things you don't want to do. And when those things are constantly taken away from you, when a lot of things are taken away from you, you're going to want to do the things that might be harder, because it's something that you're doing with your friends, or it's normal. It's a sense of normalcy that a lot of people that have special healthcare needs and disabilities lose. And while it seems strange to someone who might not have ever experienced it, it's true. Like, if you miss out on every class, you want to go to the class, even if you don't enjoy the class. You might hate math, but if you haven't done math in 2 months, you'll want to go to do math.
Pretty much. And then, of course, it's just the experience that everyone has. Like, everyone's gone to high school or done some sort of high school classes and met these people. Well, actually, I missed this entire section of my life because I was stranded in a bed. Like, I didn't go to school at all for 8th grade, and my class had all these bonding things, and they went to D.C., and I didn't get to experience that, which is, of course, is another thing that everyone got to do and was forcibly taken from me. No matter how much I didn't want to do it, it's something that, you know, I didn't get the choice in. Because this is really what it comes down to, is we're having the choice to experience something taken away, because our bodies have decided to go say, nope, not today, we're going to do something totally miserable.
Exactly. So I think we went into missing out.
You did. I didn't even have to introduce the topic of missing out. You guys just went right
so
there.
So pretend we said that a while back, and now on missing out officially, yep. I'm going to share, I think, the only consistent thing that I've shared throughout every presentation is this story. And for me, personally, missing out is something I've had to do, not a lot, but when it has happened, it's definitely impacted the people around me as much as it's impacted me, which definitely is hard because you never want to be the person that prevents everyone else from doing the thing. So for me, the story that I always go to is last year, me and my friend, we had this big plan to go to New Jersey, so a 6-hour drive from where I live to I was really confused for a second. I thought that was an ice pack. What was I saying? So we drove a 6-hour drive from where I live to go see this concert. And when we got there, the whole time I was a little bit anxious, but I didn't bring it up, which was not the smartest decision I've ever made. Because when we got there, I had a panic attack and went in and then immediately left. And my friend was understandably like, dude, what are you doing? And I was like, I can't stay here. Like, I'm having a panic attack. And thankfully, I have a friend who understands me well enough to be like, okay, I guess we'll leave. So we left and we stayed at a hotel overnight. But there was a lot of guilt on my part for that, because not only did I remove the experience from myself, but I took away the experience from everyone I was with. And that was no fun for me, like, because I had to now deal with, like, not only my own, like, upsetness for missing what I wanted to do, but also the guilt of being the reason why my friends didn't, and being the reason why I didn't. So that was hard for me, for sure, because there was I managed to move on, because I think my friend moved on pretty quickly, too. So, like, but we had a 6-hour car ride home the next day, and it was not a fun 6-hour drive. I mean, it got fun, but at first I was pretty sure it was going to be miserable because I felt so bad. Thankfully, I have good friends who understand, and it was actually a really fun car ride once, like, we got on the road, and it was not as bad, and there was, like, no hard feelings. But that's my go-to experience, because not only was that something I had to miss, but my friend had to miss it too. And I've had experiences like that a lot, and I feel like I accept more responsibility than I necessarily should for it, because I know it wasn't my fault, but I always think, well, I should have planned this, or I should have done this. And I think the biggest thing that people have to do, as hard as it is, because it's impossible to do completely, but make sure you silence, like, the what ifs, or I should have done this, or, like, I should be better, because in the end, it just matters that you're okay. So if you're going to do something that's going to make you not okay, it's not worth it, even if it might be hard, or just it might be upsetting, or you might be sad. It's not worth dying or anything past that, because you're not going to enjoy it if you're dead. That's just kind of the easiest way to put it, is it's not worth it if you have to die just to get there. Sorry. Because, I mean, what was that for? You did all that, but you can't even enjoy it in either scenario.
So, as I've mentioned before, my medical condition is completely unpredictable and just kind of does whatever the hell it wants, whenever it wants to.
Beep.
And this has literally happened to me so many times, I cannot even tell you, like, in the hundreds of thousands, basically. Like, one time, I was supposed to go down and see my grandfather with my mother, and what ended up, and my grandfather lives in D.C., and we're in New Hampshire, so that means a plane, getting on a plane and going there and all that stuff. And I remember we had planned this and I was okay, and then all of a sudden that week, I just hit a corner so fast that I just I could not get up, and I was almost throwing up because my leg hurt so much, and I was, like, basically crunched down on the floor, almost screaming and having to bite my hands because it hurt so much. Which, of course, meant that we had to cancel the trip because my pain flare wasn't ending, which made me feel so bad, and I was so upset because I wouldn't have been able to get on the plane because it would have restarted it all over again. And my mom was like, it's okay, you're really sick, it's fine. And my mom was totally understanding about it, but, like, I could almost hear my aunt in the text messages, like, what do you mean you're not coming down? Like, what's going on? Which, of course, my aunt understands this completely and accepts that I'm sick. It's just kind of like, you were supposed to get on a plane today, where are you? Type of moment. And it's happened so many times that it's just become so normal to me where I, like, literally have to mentally think for about 10 minutes before I agree to anything and think about how I feel today. What am I doing that week? What is this going to set off? What medications do I have in my arsenal to be able to do before I go to this thing that I know is going to make me sick? And it takes a lot of planning because, like, if I want to get in a car and go to somewhere, cars hurt me a lot. So if I go to a doctor's appointment in Boston, I am out for the entire next day. Like, so then I have to be like, well, I can't go to the doctor today because I have this party, but I can't go to this party because I have a doctor. Type of thing. Missing out's really hard because that's, you're getting something forcibly taken from you, but also if you have people that are your friends, eventually, even if they're good friends, sometimes they get really sick of being canceled on or not having you be able to come to things when you say you will. And it is complicated because they might be a really good friend, but, you know, everyone has their limit of being canceled on and feeling exactly. like you're ignoring them on purpose. And, you know, if they're good friends, they'll get over it, and then they'll move on yeah. from it and understand that it wasn't your fault. And the bad ones will not, and then be mean about it. So it just, it really depends on what your limit is. You know your limit. You know what's going to make you sick, you know what's going to make you worse, or what makes you feel better. And you need to listen to the fact that if something is going to push you past your limit, you can't do it, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's good pacing yourself and listening to...
Sorry.
Can I talk still?
Or... Yeah, sorry.
You're great.
Okay.
My mom just wasn't getting hand signals.
I nodded, meant we were fine.
You know your limit, and it's okay if you can't do something. There's nothing bad in it. Like, being able to pace yourself and learning the skills to accept the fact that you can't do anything is good, and it's awesome. Because, frankly, literally, I almost couldn't come here. And I was supposed to have PT today, but last night I was up till 2 a.m. in a pain flare on medication that makes me loopy. And I was like, okay, well, I can only go to this one meeting and we have to cancel PT if I want to do this. Which we did, and I'm here on on medication. Just ignoring that last part.
Well, thank you for being here.
Yeah. So, like, really, it's what you can do. And if people don't accept the fact that you can't do something, even if it's last minute notice, like an hour before something, then they really don't deserve to be around you because you can't control it.
Yeah. Like, everyone's human. Everyone has, like, their limits. Like, obviously, you will feel emotions, even if you know it's not their fault. Like, there's no one in the world that can constantly be able to just accept that 100%. But that's not an excuse to just completely be angry at them, because you can be upset in the moment, but if you don't move on and apologize and continue on, that's no longer, well, I'm human, I make mistakes. That becomes, well, you're human, but you're also mean.
Yeah, like, everyone's entitled to having one upset thing after you've been canceled on so much. You can only take so much in your brain.
Yeah.
But the
everyone has their own issues yeah, going on, like, and their own lives to worry about.
Yeah, the deciding factor is whether they move past it and accept it or not.
Exactly.
Because if they refuse to accept it and they keep acting like this every time you cancel, then really, they really shouldn't be in your lives. They really don't care who they are. I mean, as I've said, I've cut out an entire branch of my family that is painful and it's messy and it takes a lot of courage to do and understand the fact that they're more damaging than they're worth. So
our last topic is positive outcomes. So if we can end our podcast on a positive note,
So we just depressed you for about an hour. So let's
be cheery.
I think, based on as a listener to your podcast today and having heard you guys present
70 bajillion times,
The communication skills that you have are, I would think,
very developed.
Very developed and superior to, you know, others your age and many adults that I know. And, you know, you talked about needing to communicate your healthcare needs to friends and things like that so that they can understand where you're coming from. So I think I will give you a positive outcome in that. Is that you guys have great communication skills.
Yeehaw.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think the ultimate saving grace in life is communication. I think there are entire world conflicts that could be solved with a conversation, and that's a very powerful thing to think about. Like, the fact that humans are able to communicate on such a deep level is very important. And I think the fact that all I've been through personally has made it so I'm able to communicate with other people well is a gift that I would not want to take away, because I really like that I'm able to communicate with people. I don't like passive aggression. It's not a fun scenario, and it's not healthy, and it doesn't help anyone. So I like that I can settle things that need to be settled and communicate information that needs to be communicated when it needs to be communicated. Yeah.
Really just, I've met a lot of people and made a lot of friends that I would never have met if I didn't get sick, and being sick is awful, and it's awful that they are also ill with this, but you know, I'm a different person than I would have been because of this. So I guess that's okay, because I like who I am now and the fact that I know all this stuff that I didn't know before.
And I think, you know, you're both on the Yeah Council, and you...
you get a sense of empathy towards everyone, because you can feel a sense of... Because, like, if you've been through things that are really bad, you can be better at finding empathy.
And
sometimes.
I think your work here, you've created materials, and you've done these podcasts, and you have a YouTube series, and you know, created different things that help kids who are, you know, growing up younger than you, who are going to face the same struggles that you faced. You know, the hopes are that you will make their lives a little bit easier by informing them, helping with their advocacy skills, or giving them information, or even just helping them know that other kids, people understand.
The moral of the story is, youngins, communicate with people, talk to people, and make friends with nice people. And if they're not nice, don't be their friend.
Yep. Even if they're your family members.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye.